Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And I know everybody missed you last week, Tammy, because it was just me. And actually, truth be told, I interviewed Chip Murray because he's a musician. He's from Orange County, strong. He is very active in the patriot movement, and his music is very patriotic. And so I'm trying to help people say, hey, you know, if you're going to buy music, if you want to hear something new, go listen to, you know, these songs that I play a little bit on. And I think people in Wyoming would love this music because it's kind of a folksy country rock, you know, combo type of thing. But anyway, check it out.
I will.
It's up. It's posted. So, yeah, check out the interview because it's really more about Chip and his music that, you know, for that time. And what he's, you know, he's all on board with taking proceeds and actually using those to help fund or help, you know, put money into candidates that sign pledges, just like we're trying to do this with businesses and so forth. This needs to be the paradigm that if we're going to start supporting candidates, we need to put our money in those who are willing to sign that pledge because we can't trust anybody else. It's only been proven that we can't.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, and so you're one of the very few in the last election that signed it. I have maybe what, 4 or 5 people total. Anywho, you're back because I told everybody you were hobnobbing with the party and the people of power in Cheyenne, the capital of Wyoming. And so how did that go? Trip report.
So it went really well. We had a breakfast and lunch and then another breakfast the next day. We didn't have as many legislators be able to show up as we would have liked, but we were able to find, we did go down to the legislature, so we were able to connect with a bunch of them there as well and hand them different bills. Hey, what about this? Could you put this in? And we actually got a lot done.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So our bill is going in, the legislation for creating a federal review committee. A joint committee is going in, and what are the odds of that actually getting passed?
I think they're pretty good. I think that it just got assigned a bill number, so it's HB 177.
Okay. Awesome.
And I think it's got a, at least in the House anyway, I think it's got an extremely good chance of passing the House.
Okay, great.
I think it can pass the Senate too, but we'll see.
All right, awesome. Okay, so what is the tone for the coming reorg? Is Frank Ethorn going to have to step down because the bylaws do not allow, you know, that long of a reign? Because I mean, Frank has been very integral in helping redirect the state party in the right direction.
Well, I don't believe there's any bylaws for the state on that.
Okay.
As far as I know, he does not plan on running again. There's a lady, the only one that I know of that's planning on running at this time is, her name is Rebecca Bextow. She's out of, she's out of Jackson. I think she's one of the ones helping run Honor Wyoming, but I'm not sure on that.
Okay. Well, if that's the case, then do you have her contact information? Because you need to share that with me so we can kind of have a meeting and kind of bring her on board with, you know, this little committee that we have to make sure that this committee will be maintained.
Yeah, I do have her.
And so this is why we need to move forward with breakneck speed in getting counties to start creating this committee at the local level so that it forces the hand of the state to provide with, you know, an involvement and management at the state level,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. So, okay. All right. So we'll have to have some conversations offline. I just wanted to get a kind of report, because there's, believe it or not,
Brian Miller. I don't know if you know Brian Miller.
Oh, I do know Brian Miller really well.
Yeah, so he's planning on running for vice chair.
Okay. They're going to just flip roles and so forth? Okay.
Yeah, so as far as I know, he and Rebecca have teamed up, and he's planning on running as her vice chair.
You know what? I have his phone number. Maybe I should give him a call.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, he's a great guy, and I know he lives up in Sheridan. So, anyway. All right. Well, let me refocus on what we're covering. So, we covered the very beginning part of the Articles of Association. We still have a couple parts still left, you know, a few paragraphs. And then we're going to dive into the Articles of Confederation. And once we're done with that, then we're actually going to kind of take a pause on the evolution of government in America as we, you know, moved from this monarchical theocracy, magistrate, common law form of government, and, you know, take a directive turn towards a very limited and defined government, and allowing, you know, the people to basically have control over their lives and their law. And so we'll dive into that later after we cover the Organic Act. And actually, I'm going to dive into, because kind of what sets the stage, it's hard to talk about the Organic Act without talking about the Reconstruction Acts, because there were some Reconstruction Acts done that were very problematic. This was, you know, this was government doing things, you know, taking their hat off, putting it over their heart like a real gentleman and saying, this is for the best, for this is best for America. We promise we're doing good here. And it doesn't matter if they don't have the authority to do it, they can't do it. And so Lincoln did all sorts of things that he had no authority to do. And some of the Reconstruction Acts, because there's nothing in the Constitution that basically says the government's responsible for reconstructing states and so forth. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. So if we have warfare and so forth, it's unfortunately it's the cost of war, and the onus is on the individuals, because we never wanted the government to be able to decide applying that kind of welfare. It's one thing for the states to directly give to the state that needs it. It's another thing for the federal government to tax on a regular basis so that they can apply some form of welfare to the states. Oh, well, we haven't had war in a while, so we have this big, huge welfare fund, so we'll start bailing out people with hurricanes and floods and tornadoes. Even though that's a nice thing to do, next thing you know, they can actually start doing what Biden did and use that same thing to import people to actually undermine our Constitution, or however they want to apply it, because there are no hard, fast powers in the Constitution that define precisely what that is. When we allow them to do something based on how they want to do it, that goes down to how Jefferson during the Kentucky Revolution said, that means that it's up to government's discretion and not the law. And we can't allow them to and give them discretion, because every time they do, it ends up biting us on the backside.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Now, as we kind of look at, you have the Articles of Association up? Because
Yes. We
just finished Article 12. And so Article 12 basically says that the Committee of Correspondence, because we just covered this. And so this is literally, as I've said before, this is like the real, you know, wow, we're going to war. You know, we're standing up and we're actually we're organizing our resistance against Britain and the King. The Committee of Correspondence in the respective colonies do frequently inspect the entries of their custom houses and inform each other from time to time of the true state thereof and of every other material circumstance that may occur relative to this association. So in other words, they become, you know, like the, they're kind of like the communication line, the people that are speaking, and it's almost like they're filling the job of the state legislature, a wartime state legislature. Okay, so because remember, the governments have been basically opposed by the king, and he inserted his own governors. And so Article 13, being the second to last, the penultimate article of the Articles of Association, penultimate meaning that it is the one before the last, if you didn't know. So anyway, so Article 13 is, and go ahead and read this.
Okay. That all manufacturers of this country be sold at reasonable prices so that no undue advantage be taken of a future scarcity of goods.
Okay. Now, I have heard many people talk about the common law and the laying out of the of this government to basically make it so that people couldn't have, you know, that banks couldn't charge interest, that in having a state bank, and as a matter of fact, some of the state banks that were formed in the very early days actually functioned without any interest. It was a part of government. It was a service of government, that the states did this. The federal government didn't need a bank. They were the ones that basically printed and maintained the amount in circulation, which then they're maintained, and they didn't print, they coined money. And so as they coined money, the amount of money in circulation dictated its value. Now, if everybody's got gold and it's just falling out of their pockets, then the value of gold has diminished significantly. But when you deplete and you reduce the amount of gold in circulation, its value goes up significantly. And so inflation has everything to do with the amount of that currency in circulation. The more in circulation, the less the value. And so we want to make sure that when we look at government and understanding how they're supposed to control the economy, they actually don't have any other way other than the amount of money in circulation. Their responsibility is maintaining a proper value of our currency. That's what's in the Constitution. Okay, so Article 14, go ahead.
And we do further agree and resolve that we will have no trade, commerce, dealings, or intercourse whatsoever with any colony or province in North America which shall not accede to or which shall hereafter violate this association, but will hold them as unworthy of the rights of freedom and as inimical to the liberties of their country.
Yeah, and so an interesting thing is back in those days, they actually used intercourse all the time, being discussions or talk. Right? Because that's, mm-hmm. you know, communication, having intercourse. And so today...
Yeah, I pause on that one.
Yeah, so...
I mean, I know what it means.
Right, so as a matter of fact, you know, one of the bright little kids that figure it out say, what's a four-letter word that ends with K and means intercourse? Talk. Mm, yeah. Four-letter word ending with K. Anyway, so the point is that I use that. I actually, you know, I use that term because when I deal with, every once in a while, I'll deal with somebody that kind of keeps coming back at me with the same old bad argument. And I say, you know, I've already refuted this in previous intercourse. And then all of a sudden they come back with this, you know, this childish mind. And I go, well, I figured I'd lay it out there just so you could actually, you know, stumble into the trap and just, you know, kind of put it in public space how you're the one that, you know, wants to go down these types of paths. Anyway, anywho, so at the end of this, there's kind of like this, it's like a postamble. You had a preamble, and then there's this, okay, and we're doing this, you know, and we're resolved to doing this. And so this last part is like a backward or a postamble. So go ahead and read this last part, because this kind of speaks to, you know, the essence of why they are doing all of this as well. Go ahead.
And we do solemnly bind ourselves and our constituents under the ties of aforesaid to adhere to this association until such parts of the several acts the Parliament passed since the close of the last war as impose or continue duties on tea, wine, molasses, syrup, panels.
Panellas, yes. And
panellas.
That may be pineapples.
Oh,
so one of the things I know is they didn't have orange juice, and one of the primary sources of vitamin C and the good nutrients were pineapples. Now, I don't know if that's what – I'd have to do the research, but they're looking at consumables, right? And I'm going, that may be the old and original word for pineapple before we adopted that term. But go ahead.
Okay. So syrups, panels, coffee, sugar, pimento, indigo, warm paper, glass, and painter's colors imported into America and extend the powers of the Admiralty courts beyond their ancient limits, deprive the American subject of trial by jury, authorize the judge's certificate to indemnify the prosecutor from damages that he might otherwise be liable to form a trial? Or it says from?
Liable to, yeah, probably form, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, liable to form a trial by his peers, require oppressive security from a claimant of ships or goods seized before he shall be allowed to defend his property, are repealed, and until that part of the act of the 12.3, chapter 24, entitled An Act for the Better Securing of His Majesty's Dockyards, Magazines, Ships, Ammunition, and Stores, by which any person charged with committing any of these offenses therein described in America may be tried in any shire or county within the realm, is repealed, and until the four acts passed the last session of Parliament, that for stopping the port and blocking up the harbor of Boston, that for altering the charter and government of Massachusetts Bay, and that which is entitled An Act for the Better Administration of Justice, and that for extending the limits of Quebec, are repealed.
Uh-huh.
And we recommend it to the provincial conventions and to the committees in the respective colonies to establish such further regulation as they may think proper for carrying into execution this association.
Okay, so provincial, when they're using provincial conventions and to the committee. So there were different words for these assemblies, committees, conventions, councils. And so that's why when we read the Tory Acts, they laid out all the different terms that the different states went by or the different colonies went by, because they had a predilection towards assemblies or committees of safety or whatever they wanted to call themselves. And so, these are just labels for organized bodies, representative bodies of the people. Okay, so interestingly enough, what they've just thrown in here in this very last part is what their expectations are, that we're going to do this until the repeal of these things. So in other words, what's another word for these articles of association? Technically a petition. It's an organized petition to government to say we're organized and we're resolved to do this. Right? Does that make sense? Until you do these things, this is what we're going to do. Now, technically, a petition for the redress of grievances is not as organized. So this is how people should look at this. As you start organizing and you start petitioning, and you basically are laying out demands for them to redress, if you get to a point where you have enough people that are literally demanding something to be done, then you can actually say, we're going to do these things, and we're going to keep you from meeting. We're going to resist you. We're going to do these things until you do what we want you to do. And bottom line, the coup d'etat, or the ultimate response to government bad behavior, is removing them. In other words, electing somebody new, because we always do get that shot coming around. It may be 2 years away, but we use these public relation campaigns so that everybody in the area basically knows what a scoundrel you really are. And boy, it is almost like complete denial when somebody is getting so much hate and you know, vim and disdain from their constituents. Boy, you have to be in complete denial to actually try to run for office, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, why even show up? Why even file? Because you should have at least a conviction that you're not even going to finish well. So why even file? That's what we have to do. People have to understand this is what we have to do. We have to literally say, we don't care anybody, and just literally hold up a phone book of the you know, the area of election, like the county. Here's the county phone book. Anybody we just grabbed at random would be better than you. When the public servants start understanding that we're that, you know, we're that solidified, we're that galvanized, we're that, you know, committed to doing the right thing, then there's just, it's pointless. Either you convert and start doing those things that they want you to do, or you might as well just, you know, step down. You may make them miserable. You know, it may be, you know, what they call a lame duck term for you, but they're going to just make you so miserable. You'd have to feed on that type of stuff. And I think what would end up happening is after that person has finished their term, I'm sure that they would try to pack up and leave. But once we get to a point where we actually remove somebody from office, whether that be from the party or whether that be from public service, because technically, if you're in the party, you're in an electable position, and that's tantamount to public service. And so if we start using Section 3, then what should happen at the county level if you remove people from the party, or you finally get to a point where we remove somebody and we can actually start enforcing it? We should actually be sending a note to the Secretary of State, where the Secretary of State would then send this out to all states saying, this person has been banned from public service. So if they move to your state, they move to your area, they try to run for office, just so you know, they've been banned because they violated their oath of office per the Constitution, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, and therefore are no longer eligible to be a public servant until 2/3 of Congress remove the disability from them. So until that day, they're not eligible in your, you know, in your vicinage, in your county, your district, what have you. And so what would end up happening is if the people said, we're just going to ignore that, we don't have to abide by that, that would actually cause a lawsuit, or I should say an appeal to the courts, because this would go under the federal court. Why? Because it arises under the Constitution. Somebody has been accused and removed for violating their oath in accordance with Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. They're to be banned. And therefore, once the evidence is provided at the federal court has to basically require that that person be removed from office. They don't have a chance of redefining or playing with it, because we got to get the court back into the reins, or back into the framework too, because they think they can interpret. They think that they can redefine, and we have to start holding them accountable to that.
Yeah.
Nobody, I've yet to meet anybody that, you know, just acts like a little pure old child, you know, having a fit and throwing their fists and hands. You're not holding me accountable. Please hold me accountable. I never see that. It's always people trying to run and duck into the shadows so that nobody knows who did it, so that they can't be held accountable. Folks, we're going into a break, so we'll be right back after this break. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract.
integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
I think that the day we can actually have a problem where people are just dying to hold themselves accountable, people just, you know, come right out, Every once in a while, you run across that kid that, you know, says, I did it. The kid that says, you know, they come right up and say, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that cookie was somebody else's. And, you know, I don't know what I was doing, but I ate the cookie and I'm sorry. What do I need to do to, you know, make it up? Is it wrong for me to think that we should actually have, you know, be desiring that type of, I'll just say, character, that quality in people that are in office? Is it wrong to think we can obtain that?
I don't think so.
Well, so I do know that it's human nature to try to, you know, hide, to try to avoid the, you know, these things we, you know, hold us accountable, the crimes we commit. I don't want to be held accountable. But, I mean, the law demands it, though, right? And so It's one thing, you know, and it depends on how the people feel about, you know, whether that person's being removed. We got to hold them accountable. They got to be removed. But it's one thing whether you go after them and get your pound of flesh. Does that make sense?
Yeah, right.
Okay, so when we look at what has happened, let me ask you a question. Trump was impeached as a former president for what he did. Now that it's coming out that Biden and his administration was basically violating the law and actually violating the Constitution, because even though Congress may have done things that they didn't have, they were actually allowing illegals into America, flying them in from Cuba, Venezuela, because I just covered it yesterday, Nicaragua. In other words, these communist places where these are sort of pretty bad elements that people were actually coming in. And it was to a tune of 500,000 people that they actually made this, they call it, what was it? Not parole, but it was, yeah, I think that's what they were calling it. It was a parole app. And I could go back into the article, but the important thing is that they were showing up with this app basically saying, hey, this person is allowed into this country with, you know, without any review, that they, you know, will have to, you know, be reviewed later. But they flew them in. These people flew in commercial air on their own dime or what have you, supposedly. And we've already been told that from the border, they were deliberately moving illegals, invaders, from the borderline into Kentucky, Wyoming, and all sorts of other places, Iowa, and so forth, dropping them off so that they could get scattered into the woodworks. Because the problem is, when you have so many people along that southern border, there's only so much room in the woodworks. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't hide in the shadow anymore. So we need to get them into these areas where there's not a lot of people, where they may have handlers sitting in place, and these people are probably getting funded. But I think Trump could easily expose that. The point I'm bringing up is, why doesn't Trump actually point to Congress and say, you need to impeach that man. You need to, and then point down from him and say, you need to impeach that man too. That man actually ran an insurgency against my presidency, ran a resistance against what I was trying to do, Obama. Most people would look at that as partisan.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to resisting the laws, whether you like them or not, and even though most of the laws were unconstitutional, the fact that you were organizing a resistance means that you were deliberately trying to defy whether it was a legitimate law or not. You were an insurrectionist. And so Obama should be impeached. Obama should be impeached for his violations of his oath of office and what he did as a president, and creating some of these deals and moving gold over to China and so forth. I mean, he did so many atrocities. And the fact of what he did with Benghazi and how he sent that, how he sent the ambassador up to Benghazi to be killed, to be killed. I don't know if you knew that. So the reason that Ambassador Stevens was sent, I believe it was Stevens, I'm bad with names, but somehow I think it was Stevens, was sent up to Benghazi. He was the one complaining about the U.S. equipment getting shuffled from these NGOs into ISIS hands. And he says, hey, you're equipping these guys, man. What are we doing this for? These are the bad guys. And so they actually went up and they sent him up to a chancellery and or a post where there was just no security, and they just sent him up to his death. All sorts of things should come forth. And I think Obama should be charged with all of these different charges so that he's fully impeached, and then let the people decide whether he, you know, suffers from the crimes and so forth. But what would end up happening? So why would we impeach? The purpose of impeachment is to remove the emolument. So the reason why a sitting president is impeached is to be removed from office and the emoluments thereof. In other words, the pay and the benefits. A former president is receiving emoluments at the expense of the people. It's all unconstitutional because we never gave post-retirement benefits to any public servant. Believe it or not, the Congress, and we went through this when we covered the Constitution, that they're only to be paid a, you know, for compensation for their time of service, not retirement. And so they've allowed themselves to do this, but they never amended the Constitution to say, okay, so it's not just holding them accountable for while they're in, but hold it, because the whole point, again, impeachment is to remove the emolument, the benefits. Being in office, removed from office, and the benefits that come with that. In other words, a former president has benefits, and they can travel around and they can speak. So when you remove the former presidency's label from them, you can ban them from going around speaking too, because they don't have the benefit of doing that. You know how much money Bill Clinton made in traveling around the world because he was a former president?
Right.
Right. And if you remove that and say, you can't do that, you can't go around, and actually you keep them from traveling, boom, it's done. Now you've basically taken away their ability to actually, you know, have these globalists funnel money in so that they can still influence global government. Bottom line, I'd like to see Trump actually pursue the impeachment process for Clinton, Bush, and Obama and Biden, these past four presidents that are out there, so that next time we see a formal occasion where they're looking at former presidents, it'll only be Trump. You know, they go, well, these other people, that because they've been impeached, they no longer hold the former president position or title. You got to remove it from them.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it makes you wonder if sometimes they just run for Congress or senator just so they can, one time, just so they can have that lifelong retirement benefit.
Yeah, so as I look at this, again, this only removes the benefits. That doesn't send them to jail, folks. That's a separate trial. The criminal trial would be separate. So Yeah. I think that if we exert the law and hold people accountable to that, there's no doubt in my mind. And there's plenty of stuff to fry all of these guys with and how they violated our rights and so forth. I mean, it could begin there. This is why I've spent a lot of time pointing to the Department of Justice, how it needs to be completely revamped and everybody in it be replaced with those holding people accountable to the Constitution in office. Start with the federal government, start with Congress first, and then start going into the courts, you know, and clean up the federal government, clean up the bureaucracy, so forth. And actually, we want to get rid of them, but the states, only the states can do that. And then actually Trump could then start going and cleaning up the states, because when you have Gavin Newsom doing his own little insurrection against the Constitution and the people's rights, and same thing with Inslee and all these other blue states where they think they can run roughshod over the Constitution, that's got to end. It's got to end. Anyway, so we've completed the Articles of Association. So what's next is the Articles of Confederation. And so what ended up happening, because we're not going to read the document, we're going to actually bring it up on July 4th when we'll read that, the Declaration of Independence. And there were probably plenty of little acts and so forth other than the Tory acts that Continental Congress was performing before they actually passed the Articles of Confederation. But at that point in time, America was under siege. America was literally being attacked by Britain because we had declared our independence. And so when we look at the Articles of Association, even though the Articles of Association were created in, you know, I think it was kind of finished March 1st, 1781, they started working on it in 1777. In other words, right after the Declaration of Independence, they started working on establishing this firm government. They had to wait a little bit for, you know, a response. And I have no idea what they felt or, you know, I could go through those annals, but when they realized that the king was not going to play around and he was basically going to come after us, they knew that they needed to change so the Continental Congress could actually fight and prosecute a war. Because in the Articles of Association, that power wasn't there for Continental Congress to do. And actually, yeah, if you really look at it, there was hardly anything left for them to do. So when people look at this, the Articles of Confederation, there's way too many people to say, we need to go back to this because it was so limited and defined and was such, you know, this was a better, this was a failed document because the authors of it wanted to give them the power, but no ability to enforce. It was basically lipstick on a pig. You know, they said, oh, well, you can send us requests, you know, and we're going to pay you with these requisites. You send us this, you know, we need this money from you and we will come up with the money. Well, if they don't, what do we do? And that's what ended up happening very quickly when they sent requisites out to the state to say, hey, we need this money to basically arm and equip the army for George Washington to go prosecute the war. And many of the states said, well, we don't have that. We can't pay that. And so they had to take out loans and so forth. I mean, the fact, and this is the biggest fiasco. They created so many different problems because they were actually printing money instead of actually minting money. And the fiasco financially, we'll get into with the ratification debates very soon. But when we look at the finances and the fact that they didn't have coins, well, they did have coins, but those coins were always sent back to England. So everybody had to use script here in America. So that when we got coins that came in, they quickly went out because everything that we bought from the goods from anybody coming in, they didn't want our paper script. They wanted coins. So they couldn't keep the coins. And so eventually, and pretty quick, they couldn't even buy anything because they had to get the coins first because they weren't going to take anything but silver and gold. See my point? Mm-hmm. And so we got isolated pretty quick. It became a very big problem. And how we started working amongst these scripts, because some of the things that they were using as cash currency prior to all of this was crops and commodities. Tobacco was a cash crop. I mean, if you grew tobacco, you created a whole bunch of credit on what that tobacco was worth, and instead of having right. cash or silver. But when people came to buy that, where the king would come to buy the goods from us, they would pay in silver, or they'd pay in some coin or what have you. And so much of that was not very divisible, so that they would just basically keep a ledger for the farmers growing all the different crops, because the commodity broker, the place that was basically holding all of the crops, doing the middleman work, they would get the gold and silver or what have you, and they couldn't commute it all to paying everybody, because they didn't have the ability to cut a coin in half. And so right. they basically created ledgers and so forth. And so these middlemen became pretty powerful people financially, because they were the ones that were doing the procurement as well as the selling. And whenever we bought anything from foreign trade, when it came in off of ship, they wanted metal. They didn't want paper. They wanted metal that was commutable. And actually, when you really look at it, it is metal that actually makes a solvent nation. It creates a stability in currency and finance and flow. When you can go to paper, or when you go to the ability to just create out of thin air, like digital currency, you no longer have a stable currency. The other thing is, and we will find this, I think, I read this in Madison's Property, his essay on property. He basically says that the metal, the coin, the value of that coin is ultimately our property, because as we liquidate all of our holdings and commute it into coin or gold and silver, that becomes the mass of our property in a pile of coins. As we sell everything off, like we do with an estate when somebody dies, they basically commute everything, they liquidate everything into currency. And that currency, being coal, gold and silver, is actual property. But when you turn it into something that's really not property at all, then we have surrendered our property to these people who actually define what property is. In other words, how much that is worth, because they're defining the value of that. It's not something that you can hold in your hand and say, I hold this much gold, I hold this much silver, and it's worth something. Ones and zeros have no value. They're just magnetic data in the sphere of the internet. Anyway. So the Articles of Confederation move forward, and this is what this starts off with. This is the preamble. To all to whom these presents shall come, we, the undersigned delegates of the states affixed to our names, send greeting. Articles of Confederation of Perpetual Union between the states of New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Bay, Rhode Island, and Providence Plantations, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. And then they go into these articles. So the first article is pretty quick. Go ahead.
The style of this confederacy shall be United States of America.
So, in other words, the name, this name of this confederacy, this... So a confederacy is a general government that's being created to serve these aforementioned sovereign states. In other words, those are sovereign states now. They're no longer colonies. They've declared independence, and now they have basically bonded together, formed a union, and they're creating a general government to serve them. And so they're calling themselves the United States of America. Go ahead, two.
The said states hereby... Oh, wait, sorry. That's the third. Each state retains its sovereignty, freedom, and independence, and every power, jurisdiction, and right, which is not by this confederation expressly delegated to the United States in Congress assembled.
Okay, so again, they're kind of pointing the difference. The United States is the confederation, or this general government. Okay? Now three.
The said states hereby... severally enter into a firm league of friendship with each other for their common defense, the security of their liberties, and their mutual and general welfare, binding themselves to assist each other against all force offered to or attacks made upon them or any of them on account of religion, sovereignty, trade, or any other pretense, whatever.
So... interesting. What did they identify that the attacks might be upon them over? Religion is the very first thing.
Religion, sovereignty, yeah.
And trade, right. And so this kind of points out how at that point in time, religion was paramount in forming this government. Okay, so they're clearly stating that they're now basically binding this mutual and general welfare, binding themselves to assist each other against all forces offered to. Okay, so they're making this commitment. They're creating a union. Okay, the fourth article.
The better to secure and perpetuate mutual friendship and intercourse among the people of the different states in this union, the free inhabitants of each of these states, paupers, vagabonds, and fugitives from justice excepted, shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of free citizens in the several states, and the people of each state shall free ingress and regress to and from any other state, and shall enjoy therein all the privileges of trade and commerce, subject to the same duties, impositions, and restrictions as the inhabitants thereof respectively, provided that such restrictions shall not extend so far as to prevent the removal of property imported into any state to any other state of which the owner is an inhabitant, provided also that no imposition, duties, or restrictions shall be laid by any state on the property of the United States or either of them.
Okay, so the ingress and egress is a flowing in and out, right? Or I should say ingress and regress. Today we just call it egress, ingress and egress. But what are they talking about this? Provided that such restrictions shall not extend so far as to prevent the removal of property imported into any state to any other state of which the owner is inhabitant, provided that no imposition, duties, restrictions shall be laid by any state on the property of the United States or either of them. So in a way, this is kind of speaking towards the property of people. As people were traveling, they had their slaves go with them. And at this point in time, you'll notice, remember, if you go to the Articles of Association, they were disbanding themselves from, you know, the slavery altogether. They were saying, ah, we disavow this. We're not going to do this. This importation of slaves, they were taking a strong stance against slavery. And now under the Articles of Confederation, it was being ingrained. It was the political correctness had now taken over. That's, and it all actually started with the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration of Independence clearly disavowed the institution of slavery as a repugnant institution, and it was changed to not reflect that. Okay. So go ahead.
If any person guilty of or charged with treason, felony, or other high misdemeanor in any state shall flee from justice and be found in any of the United States, he shall, upon demands of the governor or executive power of the state from which he fled, be delivered up and removed to the state having jurisdiction of his offense.
Okay, so if you notice, if you actually paid attention, you could actually highlight a section and go, this aligns with Article 4, Section 2, because that's what they're talking about. If anybody flees from a crime or what have you, that they can be basically, what do they call that, extradited back to the state where they ran from. Okay, and?
If any...
Full faith.
Okay, there we are. Full faith and credit shall be given in each of these states to the records, acts, and judicial proceedings of the courts and magistrates of every other state.
So in other words, they were to have, you know, complete accord with the findings of other states, and that's fine. So it was kind of like creating an even playing field, reciprocity, where you could go back and forth from one state to the next, and, you know, as long as you're a free inhabitant thereof to do that. Anyway, Article 5 in the Constitution is where we talk about amending the Constitution, and we're going to find that Article 5 in the Articles of Confederation actually don't talk about that. So go ahead. We've got about 2 minutes left, so let's see what we can chew off here.
Okay. For the most convenient management of the general interest of the United States, delegates shall be annually appointed in such manner as the legislatures of each state shall direct to meet in Congress on the first Monday in November in every year, with a power reserved to each state to recall its delegates or any of them at any time within the year to send others in their stead for the remainder of the year.
Okay, so the state had the ability to recall them, but they had to maintain delegates. Okay, so they were committing to actually maintaining delegates to be a part of this Congress. Okay, go ahead. What's this next one?
Yeah, okay. No state shall be represented in Congress by less than 2, no more than 7 members, and no person shall be capable of being delegates for more than 3 years in any term of 6 years, nor shall any person being a delegate be capable of holding any office in the United States for which he or another of his benefits receives any salary, fees, or emolument of any kind.
Okay, so what you have here is a term limit. In other words, you go in, and once you're done, you can't go back. And so, or you can't double dip, that last part, too, that if you can't hold an office if you're doing something at another state or in some other holding. So they're kind of laying this out so that this was all kept in the Constitution for the most part. It just wasn't as wordy. How many pages is the Articles of Confederation? We're looking at 7 pages. When we actually look at the original draft of the Constitution, if I remember correctly, it's a little bit longer. It's about 11 pages because it's a far more detail. So what they took to create the Constitution was much of what you have here. They just cleaned it up, and they were far more succinct in stating what they were talking about. We literally don't have any more time. So tomorrow we'll dive back into Article 5, and we'll take it off from where we left off. Any comments?
No, okay.
All right. Well, great.
Very familiar.
Great to have you back. And folks, as we kind of conclude today, we will be back tomorrow covering the Articles of Confederation. This was the foundation for the majority, I'll just say the majority of the Constitution. Its framework had nothing to do with the Constitution. They literally broke the framework out of this, which is why they had to add a lot more, because they created an executive, a judiciary, and 2 separate legislative bodies. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.